Accession number 12243, Captain de Courcy Island, Reel 8.
Captain de Courcy Island, Reel 8. We were talking about the accommodation aboard the Pelu, and you're saying there are a number of officers in a
cabin flat. Recalled.
What exactly was a cabin flat?
Well, it had these one, two, three, four cabins, which are rather like a cell, with a bunk. Drawers to keep your kit in, and slung overhead was your bath, which you could never use in the destroyer because there was always too much motion on it at any rate at sea, which was merely a flat round dish like that, where you had I suppose about that much water,
3-4 inches.
Yes.
Where would the water come from? Would someone bring it in?
We had a steward who looked after us all. One of the stewards.
So you had your own cabin.
You had your own cabin, and a desk, of course.
And was there a wardroom as well?
Yes, there was a small wardroom.
Was there any opportunity to use it, etc.?
Oh yes, we had our meals there, and our drinks, and you had a settee. And
would you get a chance to use that at sea?
Not very often, no.
Whereas on the Relentless, you hadn't had a cabin.
I hadn't had a cabin there, no.
So that was... The captain... Would the captain...
Use captain had his own cabin. Had an after cabin, and then he had his sea cabin.
Would he use the wardroom? I mean, I know they worked in normally, but...
No, he was more or less, as you might say, a guest of the wardroom.
So that, even though it was such a small ship, that was observed.
Yeah.
Do you think that was good, having the captain as separate away from the rest of the officers?
I think so, yes.
What advantages do you think it gave?
Well, I think the captain wants to keep a bit above the rest. Otherwise, you don't have the freedom to talk quite so much. And from the point of view of discipline and so on, I think it's best that... It's a lonely life being a captain, I can assure you.
Now, the next thing is, when you went to action stations on the Pelu, what did that involve, the preparations? And then I want to cover the Bellerophon, because we didn't actually mention it.
Yes, well,
what happened on the Pelu?
We had 4 4-inch, and we had 6 torpedo tubes. That was our armament. Watching through the Buffer's gun or what equivalent of a bridge or something like that. I think that I was on the bridge mainly at my action station.
On the Pelu as well?
Yeah.
How would action stations be called on the destroyer? I mean, they didn't have tunnel, did they? Or did they have that come in?
Oh, it's all piping. Person's pipe.
Did they have to do anything to the ship? I mean, clear out the wardroom. I mean, were things...
Oh, yes. Close watertight doors, all that sort of thing. Most of them are closed at sea, but when you go to action stations, clear the gun mountings away, take off any covers they've had on, get up ammunition ready, that sort of thing. Torpedo tubes, get the torpedoes ready.
Now, what about the... I know it's going back, but on the Bellerophon, what did they do to... For action, they say you mentioned the guns, but I forgot to ask about the actual rest of the ship.
Yeah.
What would happen on action? Say again, it'd be piped. But what was done to the ship? I mean, to get it ready.
Oh, in the same. Of course, the battleship is a much bigger job of closing all the watertight doors and all that sort of thing. Getting damage control organized, ready, and then getting in case there was a fire from being hit or an explosion, all that sort of thing, or the regular parties, damage control parties, you see, all that sort of thing.
Would it affect the officers' accommodation? I mean, would they? I mean, the wooden parts, were they stripped out or?
Yes, you see, I mean, in the Bellerophon, for example, the first thing that they had to do when war was declared was to chuck the piano over the side. You weren't allowed to have a piano in your wardroom or your gun room because of fire danger. And in the same way, an awful lot of stuff was landed in it, that wood, fancy bits or anything like that, you see.
So they'd been stripped down.
They were stripped down.
Right, well, the next thing we might have gone to is when the Pelu was actually damaged or real going over.
Yeah.
I think that was on the 19th of July, 1918.
That's right, yeah.
Could you tell me exactly today what you remember? What were you doing that day? I mean, what was you were doing a special job, weren't you?
I'd had the... We were escorting a squadron of mine layers, biggish mine layers, and they were laying a barrage of mines across the top end of the North Sea to try and close it off from any German ships going out. And it was a great big barrage, went right over to Norway. They're a mixture, American. We didn't much care for them because they had an awful habit of going off as soon as they were laid, the mines. So we didn't like the job because we were escorting the squadron, you see. They had Americans had a mine that went off if it went over, was hit by something and went over like that, you see. And of course, they hadn't realized that if there was a heavy swell on, the same thing happened, you see. We were escorting them, and obviously, I had the morning watch, and I'd come down and had my breakfast.
In the wardroom?
In the wardroom. And I'd clean ship, and then I went to my cabin and for a bit of shut-eye because I'd got the afternoon watch, and told the steward to call me at 11:45 so I could have lunch before going on watch. And so I was actually asleep in my bunk, and the U-boat, I think he was probably aiming at one of the mine layers, but we were in the way. And I think the torpedo struck the starboard propeller, which was just about under where my bunk was, or a little bit further aft. And at any rate, one didn't know very much about it. It was a hell of a bang. And when I sort of collected myself, I was on the deck of my cabin, most of the cabin on top of it. And I lay there for a bit, and then I thought, well, I don't think I'm hurt, really. And so I got up, scrabbled up, and I looked across the cabin flat, and the chief's cabin was opposite mine. And he was upside down in his armchair looking rather dazed. He'd been chucked out of his bunk, too. He wasn't dressed. He was in pyjamas. And I said, it'll learn you. And he said, well, he'd some feed pump had given trouble during the night. He got very sweaty repairing it, so he thought he'd turn in his pyjamas.
I
was fully dressed.
So when you went to sleep, you kept your uniform on?
You take your sea boots off.
Another point, did you have doors on your cabin? Because you could see...
You had a door, but you didn't shut your door. You had a curtain. You just drew off the curtain across like that. Well, then we didn't quite know what had happened, I suppose, really. All right. the we couldn't get out. The hatch jammed. And actually what happened was that the explosion had set off one of the depth charges in the stern, and that made an awful mess of the whole the upper deck, you see. And at any rate, the whole of the stern of the ship was in a mess. And we were trapped.
Was there no other way out other than the
water? No other way out. And then she, the next thing was that she was on fire to abaft us. The bulkhead, we were the end cabin, that bulkhead seemed to be more or less holding, but she was settling. And
there'd be water to the other side.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes. Well, most of the stern had gone.
Where was the fire?
It was down below somewhere. I think there was some petrol stowed for the motorboat somewhere in some compartment, and that had caught fire. And that was on fire.
Was the smoke coming through to where you were?
I could hear it. Then of course the water was rising.
Could you do anything about the fire?
I thought I was frightened to go to the after magazine. And so I tried to, outside in the flat, there were two valves for flooding the magazine. I tried to flood the magazine. But of course they were completely smashed up.
They wouldn't work.
So then, at any rate, the water was rising, you see.
Within your area?
Oh, yes, our cabins are getting flooded. That was very unpleasant because an oil tank had burst as well, and so it was half oil and half water.
Where was the water coming from? Was it coming from below?
From below somewhere, but I couldn't tell you where. Coming from below somewhere.
And how deep was it?
Well, by the time they got us out, it was about up to here, I suppose.
Mid-chest, so three or 4 foot.
Yeah.
Four
oh, yes, deep. Yes, yes, yes.
Who was there? There was just you and the engineer?
Me and the chief, yes.
I mean, were you panicking at all?
No. I was trying to get out.
Had the lights gone?
Yes.
So would it be pitch black?
More or less. Yeah. He had more difficulty than me because he had bare feet and he was in his pyjamas, you see. I think I had my seafood stockings on still. I wasn't too bad. Those trousers.
It's a bit of a nightmare. I mean, the ship could have been sinking.
She was sinking then.
So that was a test of nerve.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. But then we had them working above us. We could hear them working.
On the hatch.
And so I remember I yelled out after magazine and tried to flood it, and I can't. And that raised a laugh because there was no after magazine. It all gone.
It had been blown away.
Oh, gone to the bottom. Yes. Well, then, I think it must have been about then that we felt her lifting a bit because the stern fell off. In the bulkhead, the engine room was next to our flat, and we could hear them shoring up the bulkhead there that was holding. Then they got us out. And
how did you feel?
I don't remember, really. It was all, rather like that. At any rate, I ran forward to report to the captain on the bridge. And fortuitously, I fell flat over a case of Plymouth gin, which had landed at the break, just at the bottom of the ladder going up to the bridge, which was very valuable afterwards. Extraordinary, a whole case, 12 bottles, and it landed intact, they were all intact.
Where did it come from?
The stern somewhere. So I went, I reported to the captain, and then I came back.
What was he doing?
He was on the bridge. They'd taken off their sea boots and all prepared to jump for it, I think. And, signalling. Our consort was circling us like that. She'd lowered her boats.
And which ship was that?
I don't remember her name. And then we had...
So it sounds like the prevailing... There was an it seems that people were performing their duties fairly calmly.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah.
No panic.
No panic. No panic at all.
So what did the captain say, or what did he tell you to do?
Well, I said, shall I go aft and see what I can do about this fire, I think. And so I went aft and we put out the fire.
Would you have a damage control team? Or
yes, we had a damage control team in a way. The chief had got down to the engine room. And he was very glad to do that because there was burning debris on the deck and he had bare feet. And he also got warmed up in the engine room, in his pyjamas. So, at any rate, then
how did you put... was it an actual damage control team or was it just a group of men, a group of the crew?
Well, it was more or less a group of the crew.
And how did you put the fire out?
We could still find, we got a pump working in the engine room, and we got a hose. And then the mortar was helping too, you see.
You went down to the engine room as well, did you?
I didn't actually go down to the engine room, I was at the fire, you see. And that was that. Our consort, as I said, was circling us, but he was a bit shaken because one of our depth charges had been blown up into the air and then sunk near him and shook him up no end. And then I had a signal from the admiral was my captain of the Bellerophon who had been promoted, Captain Bruin. Yes, Admiral Bruin then.
What did he signal?
Are you all right? I've signaled for tugs and things like that. We are 100 miles off Aberdeen, and they signaled for tugs and everything, anything that they could get hold of. And actually, we had 6 tugs out, and we got 2, one each side, and 2 or 3 towing and 1 at the stern. I don't know how long it took to get us in, but it was pretty slow progress. We were in absolute sitting duck, of course.
Was the ship going down anymore?
No, once the stern went.
So the other bulkheads...
The other bulkheads for help.
How much had fallen off? It's difficult for us to imagine.
Well, we were remarkably fortunate. Because the stern was where the stores were, some of the stores and all depth charges were built. The coxswain and his team had just drawn the rum ration. Dinner hour. And they had all cleared off, so that there was actually nobody in the stern at the time. There were 2 people in the wardroom, and there were 3 aft, I think, somewhere near the wardroom. They were shaken up badly, and I think we had 3 wounded. They got out all right, because the deck above them had been blown away, so they could get out.
It was a remarkable piece of luck that you didn't have more dead and wounded.
Oh, yes. Amazing. Amazing. Quite amazing. Well, then...
How did the gin come in handy?
Well, you see, we had nowhere to live, so that we had to go. We bedded down on the sailors' forage, you see.
During the
while they were getting into Aberdeen, you see, I think it took a day or two. And the gin came in very handy. We all in need of it, I think.
Would you share it with the
sailors? Oh yes, 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 yes. They put us up in the petty officers' mess. And then Farce entered into it, as I've said in the book, because we got into Aberdeen. We stuck in the entrance because we had a shaft, one of the propellers was hanging down and all that sort of thing. They got it off and they got us in the dock there. And the sailors were taken off and put in a drill hall, you know, one of these old drill halls, that sort of thing. And we officers, they said they'd booked us rooms in the Palace Hotel. It was a big hotel in Aberdeen, this is. And they put us in a taxi and took us up there. And it was a Sunday, a real Scottish Sabbath. And the manager was not in visible at all, but there was a ghastly woman who was a receptionist. And she wouldn't take us in because we had no luggage. Sounds incredible. It's a fact. Mark you, we were pretty dishevelled.
Did you explain you'd just been nearly sunk? And
we said we can't say, but we're shipwrecked mariners, you see. And she said, well, if you pay a deposit, otherwise, I'm sorry, no rooms. She said a likely story. Of course, you see, I was in a mess because I had all this oil fuel. I wasn't feeling too hot, as you might say. The chief was dressed as a sailor because he had his pajamas and so on, you see. So that I suppose you might say there was some excuse. Anyway, we rang up a naval store officer on the phone who had some naval stores there and explained the predicament. And he sent up a couple of empty boxes that contained soap. And we bugged those down to the foyer and said, there's our something luggage. And she ushered us into our room straight away. Extraordinary story, really. Unbelievable, almost.
How long were you there for?
I think, I don't really remember very much, but I think probably maybe about 3 or 4 days.
Would you get your sea chest back, or had that?
Oh, that gone. Yeah.
So you'd lost
everything. My cabin was, well, apart from the fact it was completely flooded in the end, but I'd lost everything. And I had no gear, and it was a Sunday, and all the ruddy shops are shut and that sort of thing. But however, we survived, and we made the hotel feel our presence
in
many ways. And I never saw a doctor. They just said, are you okay? And I rather foolishly said yes.
Did you feel okay? Because there's an instant.
No, I didn't.
How did you feel?
Well, I think I'd swallowed oil fuel to begin with. So I was sick. However, they said, are you okay? And I said yes. And I telephoned the naval outfitter, Gieves, well-known naval outfit in Edinburgh, and said, I want a new outfit. I think that was on the Monday or the Tuesday. And I think I must have gone down to Edinburgh a day or two after that. And they had everything made to measure and all that sort of thing already, which I was very glad of. Because I stunk to high heaven still. My clothes, I've been dried out, but you know, you stink. And they gave me a week's leave. and I had no idea where I spent it. I know I went to London because I've got an old... My brother, who was in the army, was recovering from wounds, and he got in touch with me, or I got in touch with him. And I know I went to London because I got an old theatre program, but I don't think I ever got home. And they appointed me straight away to another destroyer, Westcott. So I asked where it was, and they said they thought it was at Scarpa. And I went up to Scarpa, and she wasn't there. And so then I went down to Rosyth, and she wasn't there. And I found her in the Pens at South Queens Ferry. And I joined her. I'm feeling a bit better. And then I had an awful shock because when the buzz got round, you see, all my buddies and the other destroyers and the Pens all came on board, heard all about it, and I found I didn't know who they were, or the names or anything. Memory left it gone. And however, I didn't know what the hell to do. So I went down to my cabin there, and I came in, and there was a young probationary surgeon they had on board. He was a medical student, I think, actually, but don't think he'd got much beyond frog's legs or something like that. At any rate, he'd seen this, and he came down and had a chat, and he said, "I think it's delayed shock," which I think it was.
Did you know you knew them? Or, you know what I mean?
I didn't know who they were.
You didn't even remember knowing them?
No. And they realised something was wrong, you see. And they all shut off. At any rate, I recovered from that. I think the first lieutenant, he was an awfully nice man called McCall, Jock McCall. He became an admiral in the end. I think he realised it. I don't think the captain saw enough of me to realise.
That would be Lieutenant Peplow.
That's Lieutenant Peplow.
Had this memory loss gone anywhere else? Had anything else been affected?
I couldn't remember my youth, that sort of thing. It was funny, it came and went, and you know, you suddenly get a flash or something. It's hard to describe. I had a couple of blackouts.
By blackouts, you mean you went unconscious or what?
Yeah, passed out. But the sailors are very good because they knew I was a destroyer type. They cover up for you.
But you weren't taken out of active service at all?
No, I never went sick.
And how long did this last for?
It got better. And this chap, probationary surgeon or whatever he was, said, "Why don't you take up Pelmanism?" Well, Pelmanism was one of these things greatly in vogue in those days. You know, a memory thing, association words and things like that. And I started a course in Pelmanism. And I think it did me a lot of good. And then I found it began to come back.
About how long would you say you were affected from, you know, from July 18?
I just, very hard to say. In a few ways affected, because even when years later when I got married, I would come out and suddenly remember things. And my wife used to say, "You would never tell me that."
Did it rattle you at all? I mean, you know.
No, I just took it. I got away with it.
Now, what were your duties aboard the Peplow? You were still a sub-lieutenant?
I was still a sub-lieutenant. There I did much more. We were getting nearer the end of the war. To begin with, we were in four watches, which was absolutely unheard of after Palou and all that sort of thing.
Sorry, I said Pepler as a captain. It's the West Cup.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're in four watches. That would give you a lot more time off duty, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, you've got some sleep.